Saskatchewan is a heck of a place to have to play, and they're very proud, but hopefully Hamilton can do as well. So I'll just start off with some disclosures. Now, I don't know, this must be Dr. Karukas' slide. So just to acknowledge that I've spoken at some advisory boards and lectures and have got some funding from Roche for another disease called TTP. And I thought what I'd do today is we'd go through some aspects of the biology, the diagnosis and staging, the treatment, and some of the newer approaches. And of course, Tom is going to go into new therapies. But I'd like to start with the war on cancer. I think this is a good slide because it speaks to a couple of issues about, you know, our battle with cancer and the fight to find a cure. The first thing it shows is that the peak is quite high, so it is a challenge getting to the top. What time is there a pointer? Getting to the top of the peak, it's a challenge. It's tough. The other thing the slide shows is that it's going to be a combined effort. It's going to be a collective effort of many people working together to reach that ultimate goal. The other thing is that as you progress, you can see your progress. So the further you get up the mountain, you can look back and say, look, we've got this far, we've got this far. Now, Tom might have other ideas, but I think we're probably about halfway. There have been substantial progress that we can look behind and say, we have clearly made progress in this disease. People are living longer and people are living better. And those are become our benchmarks. When you start thinking about lymphoma, you want to know the enemy. And as in breast cancer or prostate cancer, there's a certain cell that we're fighting. Well, there's Sue now. That we're fighting. And in lymphoma, it's a white blood cell called the lymphocyte. That's what we kind of have to drill down to and think about when we're thinking about lymphoma and we're thinking about how are we going to cure this disease. So it's a disease of a lymphocyte. It originates in the bone marrow, the lymph nodes, or the lymphatic organs. These lymphocytes normally circulate around the body, so they're in many different places at many different times. Lymphoma cells, the result of these lymphocytes, are abnormal lymphocytes that may have spread upon diagnosis and may be found in other sites of the body. The problem is that the growth of these B or T lymphocytes expand and eventually form tumors and sometimes can circulate around the blood. Determining whether the lymphoma is B or T is a critical first step. B lymphomas comprise about 90% of all lymphomas, whereas T lymphomas are about 10%. And because they're rarer, they're often harder to bring people together to do studies and to understand about it. People with lymphoma often present with fever, weight loss, night sweats, or the common types of symptoms that will be the signal that there's something going on. They may have enlarged glands, which are usually painless, and an accurate diagnosis is critical. You have to be on the right path. You have to have a proper diagnosis made so you know where to go from there. Biopsy is the first step when there's a suspicion that someone may have non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And the diagnosis is made by a team of experts that specialize, as Dr. Meyer had said before, sometimes there's 20 or 30 different types, that specialize in knowing what type of lymphoma it is. The methods are evolving, and they're changing all the time, the methods these pathologists use to make an accurate diagnosis of lymphoma. They're using things called molecular techniques, and assessment of the genes, because all cancer is a result of mutations. And sometimes there's 30 mutations, and if you dig deep enough, sometimes there's 300 mutations. And that's what we're finding out the more and more we study it. So the cell we're focused on is something called a lymphocyte. And lymphocytes, like other cells, evolve from stem cells. And they mature. So they expand and mature. And there has to be a pool of lymphocytes in our bodies that's kept at a balanced level. These lymphocytes are the mainstay of our immune system, protecting us against foreign invaders. So the B and T lymphocytes comprise our immune system, and of course when you get a problem with them, you may run into problems with your immunity. But the lymphocytes are divided into B and T. The B lymphocytes protect us by shooting bullets. They're cells that develop, and they develop their own unique bullet called an antibody. That's how they kill the invaders. They make antibodies that destroy organisms, foreign invaders. And they also have memory, so that if you ever get exposed to that thing again, they instantly know what bullets to use. The other cells, the T lymphocytes, protect us by hand-to-hand combat. They directly go in as a cell and will destroy viruses and things like that. So the B lymphocytes use bullets, the T lymphocytes do hand-to-hand combat. Both are extremely important in having a normal immune system. If we focus in on the B cells, though, it gets complicated. I promised myself I wouldn't get too sciencey, but here we go. So the B lymphocytes are asked to do a lot of things, and it's a complicated journey that they go through in being able to mature and get out there, produce antibodies to protect us against foreign invaders. It starts off in the bone marrow, and they go through a lot of genetic change to get to a point where they're producing antibodies. It starts in the bone marrow, it goes in the blood, but it ends up in the lymph gland. That's where the action is going to happen, and that's where the action happens in lymphoma. It's at this point right here. And sometimes the cells are just waiting in the lymph node, waiting for their partner invader, and sometimes they've been activated. And that differentiates between a follicular and a large cell lymphoma, depending on where the genetic hit happened. We'll do that. But the main thing about this is there's a lot of genetic action going on. Genes are getting turned on, turned off, genes are getting chopped in this process of becoming a mature B lymphocyte. And it's that genetic instability that's happening that kind of sets the stage for problems. Mutations are going to occur, or mistakes that we can't prevent, we're facing them all the time. And sometimes we can correct them, but when we get older, it's harder for us to correct them. But because of this heavy action in the genes, that's where the mistakes are going to happen, and that's where lymphoma is going to arise. When we think about lymphoma, we need to consider the anatomy. As I said, it's the lymphocyte in the lymph node that becomes the problem. And I also said that lymphocytes live in all places. So when you present with lymphoma, it's not like breast cancer that starts in one place, moves over 2 centimeters, moves over 5 centimeters. Lymphoma, you can show up and have it in your neck, in your groin, in your bone marrow, that presentation. And so, you know, we as physicians and you as patients, because you'll experience symptoms depending on where the lymphoma has got into. And so it is kind of like a roadmap throughout the body. It's set up here. The lymph nodes are set up such that they develop in the bone marrow, but then they go off to the lymph glands to wait to do battle. And so the education of the lymphocytes happens in the lymph nodes. And so the lymph nodes are like mini schools for lymphocytes. That's where they get educated and figure out what they're going to do in life. So that's where they are. Tonsils, thymus gland for the T lymphocytes is very important, something we lose after about the age of 30. The spleen is a critical place for lymph nodes, and sometimes it becomes involved in lymphoma. You can feel that the spleen's become enlarged. And of course, the bone marrow, because that's kind of where they start. The anatomy of the lymph node, basically what's happening here is you have the B and T lymphocytes all waiting. They're in class at their school, kind of laying in wait. And the rest of the body brings everything that we're exposed to, bacteria, foreign substances, into the lymph node, and it kind of percolates, kind of like a coffee maker. All these foreign bits of protein get brought in and get showed to all these thousands of lymphocytes that are sitting in the lymph node, and then the lymphatics drain out. If something gets brought in that a specific lymphocyte says, aha, I've got the bullet for that, that lymphocyte will expand. And maybe 5 or 10 cells will suddenly become 10 or 20,000 cells. They go through a rapid division, and they create a nodule. And that's a normal thing to have happen. If you get an infection, your lymph glands will swell because all those white cells realize that they've got something, and they expand like crazy. But sometimes, in the case of lymphoma, they're expanding, but not because they're exposed to something, because their growth has become out of control. So there's the difference between a lymph gland that's responding to a proper infection, grade 8 when your neck nodes were all swelled up and they were tender, that's normal. But when they're big and painless and not going back down, then the worry is lymphoma. And we can trace the different types of lymphoma within the lymph node. We understand. And we look at the pathology of somebody with lymphoma when we take the lymph node out and examine it and tell you what type of lymphoma it is. You can trace anatomically what looks abnormal. So within the nodule that gets created, if it's an activated cell, it'll become a diffuse large cell, which will eventually come fully to efface the lymph node. It'll be full. The follicular lymphomas will be multiple nodules throughout the lymph gland. There's an area around this section we call the mantle, and if it gets expanded, we call that mantle cell lymphoma. And there's another area, marginal zone, that's kind of close to that. So the pathology kind of echoes, and this is where the action's at. In the beginnings of lymphoma, this is where things are going on. Anatomically, lymphoma. Now, Sue may correct me on this one. It's increasing; has been increasing for a couple of decades. Don't know why. Maybe there's things we're exposed to that we don't know, but there's no clear reason. It's the fifth most common cancer. The incidence is increasing. Although recently, I gather there may have been somewhat of a fall. There will be 7,500 new cases of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And as I said, it's a collective battle against this involving patients' groups that get involved and help with the battle by educating other patients and by doing all the good work that you folks are doing in collaboration with Lymphoma Canada. Why do you get lymphoma? You know, the reality is most people with lymphoma, there's no risk factors. It's not something that you've done. It's not you've smoked and got lung cancer or something like that. It's just something that's happened. We do know that people that have chronic immune deficiency, if you've had a kidney transplant or on immunosuppressive drugs, you may be at risk for lymphoma. There are some new drugs that are being used for arthritis that are immunosuppressive, and there's worry that people on those drugs, good drugs, they work well, may be at risk of lymphoma. In terms of viral infection, sometimes people think back, did they have a viral infection that started prior to getting lymphoma? There may be a connection there. Now, in breast cancer, there is a clear genetic signal for some folks, BRCA genes, that they're at risk. And so you want a more aggressive surveillance for those folks that are identified. We don't have that in lymphoma. We don't have a genetic profile, a test, a blood test you can do that says 15 years ago, you were at risk of lymphoma. So that's certainly something that would be helpful. It's certainly been something helpful for folks with breast cancer. As I said, the symptoms, there's a wide range of symptoms. The ones that we kind of focus in are enlarged lymph glands that sometimes you can feel, but sometimes if they're deep inside, you don't feel them. You just feel a discomfort, but it's not something you can touch. Hectic fevers that are happening not because you have an infection, they're just happening. Drenching night sweats. Drenching meaning you virtually have to change your garments because they're soaked. And weight loss that you can't explain. We all like to lose weight, but if over 6 months you've lost 10% of your weight and you really can't account for it, it's not like you're hitting the gym or on a diet. Those are the things that we're interested in. If you have any B, C, or D, we call those B symptoms. So you'll be, your classification of lymphoma stage something, it'll have a B because you had the presence of those symptoms. Other possible signs and symptoms, abdominal discomfort, pain, bloating, you may feel that it's getting bigger. Non-specific flu-like symptoms, you may have fatigue and low energy. You may be experiencing back pain, gastrointestinal complaints, itchiness. About 20% of people may have a cough. So these are the types of things. And these, of course, all relate to enlarged lymph glands that are causing physical problems. The diagnosis and classification of non-Hodgkin lymphoma is a critical thing, as has already been mentioned. The types of things that we use routinely to understand more fully the situation for a patient is blood tests. And let me tell you, the CBC is a very critical thing. Your blood counts, your hemoglobin, white count, and platelet, they really give us an indication of how you're doing. If lymphoma is coming back or progressing, the hemoglobin will often drop, and I found over the years that that really becomes a useful signal to me that there's something going on. Of course, we have to do proper imaging, which mainly talks about CAT scanning. We don't use gallium scans as much. Sometimes we'll use an ultrasound, especially if the lymphoma is threatening a major organ. We may want to have a quick look and use an ultrasound to see if the organ's in trouble. The biopsy, lymph node, and a bone marrow test. And then the molecular analysis that I alluded to before, which is growing, immunophenotyping, flow cytometry, and genotype testing. That isn't here yet, but there are methodologies now to be able to more accurately diagnose and predict the prognosis of lymphoma using a very deep sequencing approach. So the biopsy is a critical thing. That first biopsy that happens is key. We like it to be the whole lymph node if possible. So if it's something that you can feel, we prefer to be able to excise that lymph node and have a look at the whole picture. Failing that, if the abnormality is deep inside, we're not going to do a full laparotomy to get at it. We'll use CT-guided core biopsy. But keep in mind that the cores that you get are really just that. They're just small sections of the lymph gland. It's not, for the pathologist, it's not nearly as good as having an entire lymph node. We fine needle biopsies we don't use. If we're concerned that there's some other malignancy going on, an adenocarcinoma, sometimes we'll do a fine needle, but it doesn't give you enough tissue to get what you want, so they're not really that useful in this disease. So, a nightmare for medical students is trying to understand what was the classification of lymphoma, because as Ralph said before, it's terribly complicated and it's evolving. There, you can drill down to about three classification systems, and when you're kind of learning about lymphoma, you'll run into this. The working formulation was a very simple clinical approach that I think has kind of stuck around because there's some attraction to it. The real classification, I think, is now done, but the real one that we're using is WHO, the World Health Organization, WHO classification for lymphoma. This working formulation that I talked about before, this goes back to 1982. Really what it was saying was low-grade lymphomas are lymphomas that grow slowly. They're indolent. They change, they're very stable. Whereas high-grade lymphomas are unstable and grow rapidly. And clinically you can tell things are changing. And that's how we classified lymphomas based on their clinical behavior. However, we also recognize that there's many more technologies coming in, flow cytometry, genetic analysis, on and on and on, that we have to embrace this new technology and come up with more accurate diagnoses based on these newer tests. So it is a world collaboration. There's over 75 authors of the WHO, Canadian pathologists involved, U.S., Europe, 100 international hematologists and oncologists that all come together. It truly is a worldwide thing to come up with the proper classification. This is what it looks like. I won't test you afterwards, but so it's complicated. There's a lot of stuff up there. But you can see kind of the hallmarks of it. Is it B or T? And is it something that's going to grow slowly or indolent? Is it aggressive? Is it really aggressive like leukemia? And or is it associated with viral? Those are kind of the main things that they're looking at. But of course, it's much more in depth with all the technologies and technologies that are evolving all the time to come up with a more accurate diagnosis. To understand it, it all comes from the genes. It comes from what is the status of the genes? What sort of mutations have happened? Of course, we have 23 pairs of chromosome. You get one copy from mom and one copy from dad. That's where these chromosomes arose. These things are tightly wound, not meaning they're stressed out, but they're tightly wound, and they're comprised of genes and DNA. And that is the fingerprint for any person is determined by your genes and DNA. And not, again, not to get too sciencey, this is a production, this is a like a factory. These genes are happening all the time from the day you're born till the day you die 24/7. These genes are being run. And what happens is there's the genetic code for which there may have been a mistake or something, and that becomes a mutation. Many times those mutations mean nothing. It's the thing still runs fine. They make something called RNA, and the signal from RNA goes into a machine, and it reads pairs or groups of three, and it says this amino acid, this amino acid, this amino acid, depending on the code. So you can see if there's a problem in your code, you're going to start making abnormal proteins that may go on to cause cancer. So the status of your blueprint of genes is important, and that's where scientists have to start hunting. What's going on here? Why has this lymphoma, and looking back and trying to figure out why has this lymphoma developed? Why is this person sick, got big lymph nodes, fevers? Can we tell by looking at the code? And that is where, if you're on a clinical trial and you're asked to give, you give your first consent, obviously, but then sometimes you're asked to give another consent, and that's to have a biopsy for the future generations so that the scientists can take your lymphoma and do this kind of analysis. Very critical. And that's what they're asking for. There's been a hallmark. And the hallmark is we've figured out the genetic code. That's a heck of a thing. So for humans, the entire genome has been sequenced. And decoding the Book of Life, Fingerprint of God, Milestone for Humanity. Here's Collins and Clinton. And that was a huge undertaking. And it's the first step in what I'm talking about, which is really drilling into the nature of cancer. And having this blueprint was a huge first step. But where we stand right now is still a bit of a problem. We understand some of the genes, but there's a whole lot stuff in there we don't know what it's doing and how it's involved. So the research that's happening at this level is critical to really understanding what's going on. And once we really understand what's going on, that's when things really start to go and improve. Now, if anyone wants to be a PhD, this is kind of what you're up against. So when you start digging into it and doing studies, how does this protein affect another protein? How does this gene affect another gene? Looks like that. Every gene product interacts with multiple other genes in the whole environment, so it's very complicated. We're complicated creatures. Everything that's going on in these tiny little cells, it's a network of, it's the most complicated factory you can think of. So to approach this, we have technologies now, still mainly in the research situation, where we can look at everything. What genes are turned on? What's happening? You know, oftentimes it's just a snapshot, but you can create these gene heat maps, which based on the color are telling you which genes are being turned on. So if they're more red, that particular gene is turned on, often just with a moment in time, but it does give us a better understanding, other than just looking under the microscope what the cell looks like, you understand what it's doing genetically. And that has resulted in us classifying lymphomas based on mutations. So we now have become much more precise in saying somebody has follicular lymphoma or a mantle cell lymphoma or anaplastic large cell because we expect to find these mutations. So the mutations are now helping us better classify. Now, I don't know how many liberals are out there, but God love the liberals because they have pumped in the province of Ontario, hundreds of millions of dollars to fight cancer. McGuinty, bless his soul. And this is a group called OICR, Ontario Institute of Cancer Research. And their idea is go big and go bold. And we're going to put taxpayer dollars into looking at all the genetic situations of cancer. We're going to go deep, we're going to go big, we're going to go bold. And with that, whereas it took Collins and his group 15 years to decode the human genome, we can now do it in less than 24 hours. For any given patient with these high technology, high throughput, it's kind of makes sense. You know, the first computer that went in space weighed about 3 tons and was, you know, half the size of the room. We can now just on a, not a BlackBerry, but an Apple or something, we can get the same information. So that the technology has been incredible, and the technology when applied to dissecting out all the genes has been equally amazing. And now there are instruments across the province because of this OICR that are able to do unbelievable sequencing, even in the last decade. So what about prognosis with lymphoma? This is a really critical thing because when you sit down and discuss with your hematologist, you really are looking forward to having a transparent conversation about what am I up against? What can you tell me about the rest of my journey? What's it going to be like? So prognosis is critical. Molecular markers, we talked about clinical markers. The prognostic markers we use in the clinic are the IPI, International Prognostic Index, and for follicular lymphoma, the FLIPI. The IPI looks at these things and gives you a score. Now, these are things that are fairly simple to get the answers. presumably you know your age. The stage of the lymphoma, how advanced it is, performance status, this basically boils down to how much of the day you in bed. If you're in bed because you're sick more than 50% of the day, then you're in the category where there's a problem. If the lymphoma, which normally should be in a lymph gland, suddenly starts growing in other places outside of the lymph gland, that tells you something very important. It tells you that the lymphoma has changed. It no longer wants to stay in its normal home and retain that normalcy. It now can go off on its own and grow anywhere. That's a signal of a more aggressive type of lymphoma. There's things that have gone on in that lymphoma that have empowered it to behave differently. And then a blood test called an LDH is important. So collectively, you put them together, and it prognosticates extremely well, these simple tests. Now, if it's follicular lymphoma you have a different set, which has some similar features, but one of the features that's different is how many sites of your body involved. So for follicular lymphoma, this becomes a critical thing. And these are all through the process of a good physical examination and CT scanning. Any lymph gland that's bigger than a centimeter gets a check, and then you can sort of determine if you have more than four of these regions involved, then it's a higher level. So one or two for the flippy, good, two, three, plus. Staging is also extremely important. We're trying to understand the extent of disease, and in some circumstances, we're trying to determine if there's any bulky nodes. And that becomes an issue that may change things in terms of the proper treatment decisions if there's tumors that are bulky, more than 8 centimeters. We want to kind of consider what are the potential for complications, and we also use the staging to decide what type of treatment's required. These are the types of tests that many of you will have gone through to more fully understand. Obviously, a good history and physical, blood test, chest x-ray, CT scan, bone marrow, which nobody likes, gallium scan. Sometimes we do advocate doing a lumbar puncture as part of the staging in certain types of lymphomas. We want to determine, has it got into the spinal fluid or into the brain? And the reason we want to know that is because there's a fundamental thing built into our body that when we give drugs, they never go to the brain. There's a barrier there. And so our strategies have to change. Stage 1, 2, 3, 4, it all, again, depends on the extent. Once the lymph nodes, once it's gone beyond the lymph nodes, say into the bone marrow, it becomes stage 4. Sometimes it's obvious. Clinically, you can palpate and measure the lymph nodes, but sometimes you don't feel anything, and you have to use the CAT scan to find out what's going on inside and really get an accurate assessment of what's going on. And this raises another big challenge, which is part of the OICR. It's called one millimeter challenge. And this is using imaging, first of all, to maybe find cancers earlier, but also to find out, once you've completed therapy, is it all gone? Am I in remission? And so one of the technologies that's emerging is PET scanning. And sometimes you can see something that looks abnormal and it's totally dead. It's just a scar. And we use the PET scanning to help us understand that. But we really want to get this technology going so that we can spot cancers much, much earlier. And so certainly here in Hamilton and in Toronto, there are great efforts to develop new tools to find cancers at an earlier stage and smaller cancers. Even beyond that, wouldn't it be great if we could just use blood tests to follow your cancer? You don't have to keep going for CAT scans and things like that. So there's something called MS, or mass spectroscopy. Okay. This is another way of looking at biomarkers of patients. so much easier if we had blood tests. This kind of revolutionized things in prostate cancer. They got a blood test, the PSA, that really became an invaluable clinical tool. And so there is great efforts, again, God bless them, the OICR, to develop these exciting new technologies that help to determine, is the cancer gone, or can we pick it up at an earlier stage so we're going to do a better job when we treat it earlier. So lastly, and it's kind of a segue into Dr. Karukas's talk, treatment. So lymphomas are either indolent or aggressive. They're classified on their cell behavior and that all-important diagnosis. The majority of indolent lymphomas are follicular, they grow slowly, and they may actually be fairly widespread at the time of diagnosis. For indolent lymphomas, the disease waxes and wanes in the early stages, and one of the hardest things patients have to understand is just leave it be. If you're not having symptoms, let it alone. And patients may remain asymptomatic without treatment for a number of years. This is a tough thing to understand. I've got cancer in me, but you're not doing anything about it. You're just watching it. But for some folks, it goes on like this for years and years. The disease is initially chemo and radiosensitive, but the more you treat, it can become resistant. The treatments no longer work, but the people can live a long, long time with this. Aggressive lymphomas develop more quickly and they require immediate treatment. Patients may be younger and they usually are symptomatic when it's more aggressive, and these ones can be cured in up to 50% of patients. Watch and wait, radiation, chemotherapy, immunotherapy, transplantation, things Dr. Meyer talked about, these are all part of our fight for each patient to get them into complete remission. As Ralph had said before, this all started out of the horrors of war. With nitrogen mustard, it was a war gas. It had toxic effects on the lymphatic system, and then people said, well, geez, maybe we can use it to treat cancer. I'll bypass this, but just to say that we still use conventional chemotherapy, chemotherapy that works on this thing called the cell cycle, you might remember from biology. All cells have to divide, they have to replicate their DNA, and at various points, you can use drugs to stop that. Now, the problem with these drugs is they're not selective. Any cell that's dividing is going to get hit, and of course, that leads into side effects. So this is what we want. We want to just hit the cancer cells. And for B or T lymphocytes, there are many targets. Drugs that will specifically attack that cell based on what's on their surface. And the game changer has been a drug called rituximab. This is an antibody, the same way as the antibodies the cells make, ironically, but it targets a protein on the surface of lymphoma cells. It has changed the game for B-cell lymphoma. We're still looking for one for T-cell lymphoma, but it's been a game changer. How does it work? It can kill by binding to the cell, engaging complement. It can bring in other cells, those T lymphocytes that do hand-to-hand combat. And it can actually send signals into the cell that kill it. So, to be honest, I don't know if the folks from Roche are here, but we don't fully know which are active in any given lymphoma in any given patient, but these are. Rituxan has changed the game. And if you look at clinical studies and you pile them all together, something we call a meta-analysis, you can see that across many studies, across many countries involving thousands of patients, the addition of rituximab to standard chemotherapy makes people live longer. Survival's better. Across the board. And if you think about using Rituxan as maintenance, in other words, giving it every 2 or 3 months for a couple of years, it also improves survival. So you can see that it favors that. And that's pulling all these studies together. So the signal is crisp. It's clear. For large cell lymphoma, same situation. People receiving Rituxan and CHOP chemotherapy, standard chemotherapy, have, and this has now been updated out to about 12 years, the benefit still exists. The benefit of using maintenance Rituxan in large cell lymphoma has not been proven, as opposed to follicular. What about new drugs? So here's an old dog doing new tricks. And this is a drug, there's an interesting history about it, but it's made by Lundbeck. This has also been a bit of a game changer. And not so much because it's that much better, but because people with follicular lymphoma, instead of receiving CHOP-R, if you receive bendamustine-R, the toxicity profile is much, much better. And that's what moved the needle for this drug. You don't lose your hair. People tolerate the drug much better. So some of these old drugs are being put in and making it better. Now, just near the end here, we kind of talked about using drugs to hit the lymphoma cell at the surface, but what's going on underneath? What are the signals at play below that part? And so now we have drugs that are just targeting little interactions here, and there's an exciting new drug called ibrutinib that's coming out that does just that. Very effective in patients with a cousin disease, CLL. And HDAC inhibitors. HDAC inhibitors are thinking more about what makes the chromosomes all tightly wound and have their shape. If we can release those, we can expose genes, make therapies better. So, in conclusion, we're all here today, learn a bit about lymphoma, but also the important thing is to have hope. And I would submit that new discoveries, OICR, drilling into chromosomes at unbelievable levels of detail, these new treatments, how to use them properly, better imaging so that we can get down to 1 millimeter so we can identify cancers at a tiny microscopic stage, is going to move us up the hill and help us close in ultimately on curing this disease. So with that said, I'll stop now, and thank you very much. God bless you again for coming out. And even for the Oshawa folks, you know.